From Value Invest Asia, this is The Asian Mavericks. We explore the hidden stories of successful founders, business leaders, and investors in Asia. Here's your host, Stanley Lim.
So this week we're chatting with Jin Saoyong, and Saoyong is a business and life coach, and he's most well known for his online sharing through LinkedIn with his page Chasing Horizons. Saoyong has always been a great student, and really through his hard work and intelligence, he made his way to Singapore as a scholar. And very early on, he already knew about his dream in life, which is to become an airline pilot. However, after 15 great years as a commercial pilot, he started thinking about the security of his career as artificial intelligence developed faster and faster every day. This is when Saoyong think more about creating another career path for his future. And with his love in learning and working with people, he found interest and fulfillment in the people development industry. Today, he led his life coaching business with his co-founder, Damien, through their company called Peaks. Saoyong's story really reminded me on the need for us all to constantly learn and grow, even when we have already found our life calling or we feel that we are already living our best life. It is important for us not to be afraid to start something new again at any stage of our life. So let's start at the beginning and relive Saoyong's journey with him once again.
I grew up in a fairly typical middle-class background in a small town in Malaysia. There were five of us in the family, my parents and my elder brother, myself and my younger sister. So nothing really out of the ordinary, just typical Asian family background, go to school, study hard, you know, don't get into trouble. Yeah.
And were your parents very strict to you, or they're quite laid back? Wanted you to be a lawyer, a doctor straight away, you know?
Okay. So my parents are strict, but I think the benefit, the real gift that they gave me was they gave me the freedom to chart my course. So they never really... So my mother was a school teacher. She took early retirement to look after the three of us. And my dad was a dental surgeon. And there was never any pressure from him to take over his practice. So I think one key lesson I learned from them early on was like, you know, if you study hard, you stay out of trouble, you'll be okay. Hmm. So, and at a very early age, I remember it was coming to my, what is the equivalent of the PSLE in Singapore, right? Because I grew up in a small town in Malaysia.
Right.
So coming up to that, my math wasn't that great. And my mom told me, if you score an A for this, for your math in this exam, I'll get you a new bicycle. So I was like, all right. So I worked really hard for my math. And that was like the one of the first formative experience I had in the power of hard work, of just being disciplined and putting in the work.
Yeah, I see. Okay. And of course, definitely, I assume you got a bike.
Yeah, I got a bike.
But of course, now you are pursuing your own business as well.
Yeah.
Having entrepreneurship, I think, in someone... It's not really common, I feel, in most people. Do you, at the sense, at the time, already feel that, you know, you're quite entrepreneurial? This is something that was cultivated later on?
Yeah. Okay, I can very clearly and honestly say that for a very large part of my life, until maybe about 3 to 4 years ago, I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I never thought I had the makings to run my own business. And I would consider myself kind of like an accidental entrepreneur. The reason why I ultimately set up my own business was when I started doing coaching. Or when I first started sharing this aspiration of becoming a coach with my friends, some of them actually said, you know, if you are going to have clients, then you need to set up a company, whether it's an LLP or the private limited, I was like, why can't they just pay it to my name? You know, that kind of naively. Then he said, no, you know, what if you are engaged by an organization, you know, and you need your own registered company for them to pay, because they generally don't pay direct to an individual. So I was like, oh, okay. So that was like what kickstarted my entrepreneurial journey. I mean, it's really been, I'm actually quite amazed at how far it has come from just setting up the company, you know, and then handling the finances and doing the branding and the marketing and even engaging with different types of clients. So this is one of my life's biggest surprises that I can safely say. Right. They ended up becoming what you would call an entrepreneur.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. We'll definitely dive deeper into that later on. But just going back a little bit on your growing up journey, did you came to Singapore to study or how do you end up here? And, you know, your story after you got here.
Okay, so for this, I have my dad to thank. So it was after what was the equivalent of the O-level examination. And my dad happened to find a newspaper cutting on applying for a scholarship in Singapore. And he just told me, hey, why don't you try and apply for this? And in my mind, you know, small town boy, I was like, study in Singapore as a scholar. I was like, I never thought I'd make it, you know, but just to humor him, I gave it a shot. And lo and behold, I ended up in Singapore in one of the top two junior colleges at the time. And it was the perfect fish out of water experience because I was one of the top students in my school back then in a small town. And then suddenly I'm dropped in what was the most highly competitive academic environments in Singapore. And back then I had this idea that all Singapore students are like this. And I also very clearly remember when I was in a lecture, the lecturer came in and said, you know, if I go to the canteen and I take a stone and I throw it, I'll hit either a 3A or a 4A student. And back then, I was struggling to pass my common test. So, but okay, to cut a very long story short, I finally figured out how to actually prepare for the A-levels. And I did reasonably well. Reasonably well to score another scholarship to go into university to do chemical engineering. It was at that time, one of the top five Fortune 500 companies that sponsored me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, but then then what happened in university was, I'll sum it up by saying that the most important thing I learned in university was what I did not want to spend the rest of my life doing.
Which is?
which was to go into engineering, to go into an industrial environment, to work a 9-to-5 job or even be in an office. Because when I first went into university and I was exposed to the world of engineering studies, and ultimately when I did my industrial attachment in an engineering firm, one of the things that I thought to myself was, if this is a game and this is the prize for winning this game, is this even a prize that I want? And when I realized that the answer was no, I was like, okay, I have the clarity to do what I need to do. So when I graduated from university, the only serious real application I did was to apply to the airline.
Right.
Yeah, to be a pilot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what is it about the airline business that attracted you to go that route?
I think first, I have to thank Mr. Cruise. So when I was very young, I watched the first Top Gun movie.
Right.
And that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to be an airline. I didn't even say airline pilot. I said, I wanted to be a fighter pilot.
Wow, okay.
And so my parents both knew this. And so ever since I knew the meaning of the word ambition, I will always give, when people ask me, so what is your ambition? I would say, I'll give them a few options, but airline, no, I cannot say airline. But pilot would always be one of them. And my dad, very early on, he already knew, he said, hey, you know, the life of a fighter pilot isn't that great. You know, it can be dangerous and this and that. Why don't you go and be a commercial pilot? I was like, no, you know, I want the, you know, Top Gun, whole Top Gun package and everything.
Yes.
But then as I matured, as I grew up, as I spoke with more people about the aviation industry, a career in aviation, I realized that a career as a commercial pilot would be what suited me.
So jumping into this new adventure,
yeah.
was it everything that you thought it would be at the time?
Well, I you see, it's one of those existential questions. Is it really a dream come true? I would say it's really a dream come true. And because it is a dream come true, it is very precious to me. This whole experience of, you know, where if I were to imagine I could time travel, I can go back to my 10-year-old self, the little boy, and tell him, hey, guess what? You made your dream come true. Yeah. And that to me is something that I find very fulfilling.
Yes.
Yeah. And I also see that in other aspects of my life where if I can recall what my aspirations and dreams were when I was growing up, and now if I can fulfill it, right, if not in the real, in the exact terms, but in terms of the principles behind it, the motivation behind it, I think that really gives me the fuel to choose the struggles that I want to work with. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So of course you went on to have a successful career as a pilot, but along the way, yeah, you realized that of course you started coaching people, and can you share a little bit how you got into coaching? And
Okay. So I think one of the things I was very fortunate to have in my airline career was I've always had the benefit of good mentors. So, and because of the mentors who have guided me, because I had, when I joined the airline, I had zero flying experience. And I was like feeling my way around the dark, understanding, you know, what are the expectations of someone who is new to this. And it, when having that mentor to show you, right, where to go and where not to go is something I find incredibly valuable. So when I had the opportunity to mentor the cadets and the junior pilots, that's where I took it up. And along the way, there were also internal opportunities to train our pilots. And that's also where I discovered, you know, hey, you know, it's like a natural extension, right? So that's when I also took the opportunity to train pilots and also discovered that it was really fulfilling. And then over time, I realized that, you know, what we were training them in, which is all these, the non-technical skills for flying, things like leadership, teamwork skills, communication skills, decision-making skills. These are not unique to just aviation. And that's when I started thinking, you know, how can I contextualize it for other sectors? Especially after I first drove a Tesla in San Francisco, and I realized that the level of automation that has become common to the everyday user, that the threat to my career relevance is very real.
Right.
So it was on the fear part is how to stay relevant, and on the hope part was how can I then deliver value from my years of experience in training and developing people to people outside aviation.
I see. Wow, okay. It's interesting that you explain that, you know, there's this pull and push factor,
yes, yeah,
within you to push you to sort out another separate career path for yourself. And from your experience in coaching your junior staff, and then later on to, I guess, people outside the industry, what is the key moment that you realize that, hey, you need to maybe start to take this seriously? Or at the beginning, you was just seeing it as more of a, I guess, a hobby or side project?
I think, you know, in a sense, I've always taken it seriously because fundamental to people development, whether as a mentor, as a trainer, as a coach, ultimately, at the very baseline, we have to be able to make people feel heard, feel safe, and feel special. And we cannot do that if we are not serious. So I would say at the very beginning, I've always taken every engagement seriously. And it's just like, you know, level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4 to level 10 or whatever it is beyond that. And right now, it's kind of like thinking about how to scale, right, is when I understood and realized that the message that I'm sending out resonates with many people. Not only people within Singapore, but we've had an engagement with one of the largest shipping firms in the world. And we had, it was a virtual engagement. We had people from the entire APAC region tune in. It was like 400 participants.
Wow.
And the level of engagement and the feedback that we got from it was tremendous. So we understood, Damien and I understood that, hey, you know, this is something that, as cliche as it may sound, it's something that the world needs.
Can you walk us through a little bit? How did it actually grow and manifest into such a big movement, right?
Okay.
From the beginning, you know, maybe your first client, your first outside client, how did you land that?
Damien and I share this vision of resilience as something beyond just persistence. Because I think about 4 or 5 years ago, which is before the pandemic, we saw that we wanted people to have the skills, the capabilities to not only survive, but thrive with change. And back then, generally, when you ask people, okay, what does resilience mean? They'll say, okay, resilience is perseverance, tenacity, grit, never give up, which is true. And usually, the stories attached to these values are people have gone through very, very difficult circumstances in life. They've gone through some major disaster and how they've survived it and picked themselves up. But we also wanted it to apply to people who live on a day-to-day basis. So it could be, for instance, a single mom working 2 jobs to support her children. It could be a retiree who is facing the prospect of staying meaningfully engaged. It could also be students who are still trying to find their way around in this very unpredictable and, in a way, intimidating world. So while things like perseverance, resilience, grit, tenacity are important, we also identified that in order to be at our best selves so that we can thrive and not just survive, so we use the hand as the framework for thrive. So T-H-R-I-V-E, right? So each finger and the palm represents one key component of resilience, our holistic resilience. So the first is your thumb. The T stands for thoughts. So things like our values, our beliefs, our mindset. The H stands for health, because if we're not healthy, it's very difficult to thrive. R is relationships, because without relationships, right, we cannot have things like love, friendship, kindness, generosity, compassion. I is income and investments. So this will be right up your alley, then. So, and income investments is, in the kind of society that we live in, money is a proxy for many things. At the very basic, it's a proxy for stability and security. If we don't learn how to manage our money, we will become a slave to money, and that it's very difficult to thrive that way. The V, we say vocation and we don't say work, because with the idea of vocation is this idea of meaning and purpose. And it's what we see affecting many people around the world when they do things day in and day out without really understanding why they're doing it, what's in it for them, how does it contribute to society. And I think the pandemic was a very good study in the importance of meaning. And the E is the, this is a slightly longer thing, is the enlightened self-awareness.
Right.
So we believe that self-awareness is important, but self-awareness alone is not enough. For instance, someone who is a gambling addict, he knows he has a gambling problem. But if he can, so that's level one self-awareness. But if he cannot do anything about it, his life doesn't change. Someone who is has that enlightened self-awareness is able to identify what he needs to do in order for him to thrive. And this E is what brings everything together, because your hand is not the same as my hand. So your picture of thrive will look very different from mine. But each component, what health looks like to you, what good health looks like to you, what supportive relationships look like to you, enough income, meaningful work, all these also look unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that when we have all five fingers working together, the hand is the strongest.
Mm.
If I suffer an impairment in one finger, but the others are strong enough to support, we can also thrive. For instance, if I like to use this example, Stephen Hawking.
Mm.
So Stephen Hawking had very bad health, but he had the other pillars to compensate for it, and he lived a thriving existence for a large part of his life. And the other thing is, we use the hand because there is no such thing as an individual resilience. We are only as resilient as the communities that we belong to. So our hands are not only meant to serve ourselves, to do things for ourselves, but our hands are also meant to support other people. So we believe that resilience requires community, which is why the engagements that we are involved in, at some point, it will involve some level of community development.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how we, from that core mission, we built it to be able to reach out to more clients and ultimately engage more people and spread the word.
Right. Of course, you mentioned about your business partner, Damien. And I think a lot of businesses, they will thrive very well with a partnership, but also partnership itself is complicated.
Yeah.
Right. So can you share a little bit about your history with Damien? How do you guys met and how do you describe your current working relationship?
I call him my brother from another mother. I started out mentoring him.
Hmm.
But over time, as the friendship grew, now he mentors me in other things because he has a lot more experience in the entrepreneurship side of things.
Hmm.
In the engage, going out to speak with people, you know, understanding the core business side of things. So I'm more like the front facing, you know, talk to people, spread the word. So we kind of wear different hats, but I think at the very basic, and this also sounds simple to the point of being cliche, is that point of trust.
Hmm.
Trust in the sense that we can even disagree with each other, but the disagreement doesn't have to mean that the relationship is impacted. So like I said, as we were developing the framework, as we were thinking about, okay, how do we engage in projects that are meaningful not only to us but to the client as well, we always believed in having authentic conversations in the sense that we are free to challenge one another. That's generally the recipe for not just friendships, but pretty much any meaningful relationship that we want in our life.
Right out of the gate when you guys started, was business all pouring in right at the start? Or?
I think word of advice for all wannabe would-be entrepreneurs is always keep your expectations low, right? Keep your expectations low, but never lose sight of the work that needs to be done.
Mm.
So we had the benefit of, number one, it started out as just something that we thought was interesting, that was interesting to do.
Mm.
So we just built on it step by step. And then as the nature of the business change, then we have to change along with it. I would say the business, one good thing was we've never had to go out to sell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ours was always people approach us, but one needs to be patient when doing this.
Mm.
And this is not a playbook that I will also say that everyone should follow.
Mm.
But if you want to do this way of doing business, then ensure that you have enough resources in order to create the kind of business that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in a way, your approach is really not having too much big expectation that you want to close something,
yeah,
but rather have a more open mind of just meeting a new friend and learning about the other person first.
Yeah.
And see if there's real value that you can add to them, right? Yeah, that's and definitely require a lot of patience on your part.
Describe. So you mentioned about word of mouth, right? So word of mouth recommendation is one thing, but the other thing that has really helped my reach is learning how to brand myself and Chasing Horizons on a digital platform.
Mm.
So my digital playground is LinkedIn.
Mm.
I like LinkedIn as a platform because there's a little bit more skin in the game, because not to say that there are no fake profiles, but people tend to have to be more professional in who they portray themselves to be and the kind of engagements that they have on the platform.
Mm.
And also, I find that that is where the key decision makers in organizations will be looking for potentially people to help them solve certain problems within their organizations. So this is another thing that I also didn't expect myself to be doing in this journey so far, and that is becoming a content creator. Some people call me an influencer, but I'm not really sure whether I'm comfortable with the term.
No.
But it's... that has really helped in finding the kind of clients that match who we are.
Right.
Because when you can communicate who you are clearly, then you'll be able to attract the people who align best with you.
Mm.
And I think that makes for a successful partnership.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And this digital presence that you have cultivated for Chasing Horizon, your brand and yourself, is it from trial and error, or how did you came about choosing that let's go big on LinkedIn?
So I used to write on this platform, Quora.
Right, yes.
So Quora is like a Q&A platform, right?
Mm.
And that's when I first chose the name Horizon Chaser.
Mm.
So, and then along the way, as I started my journey beyond aviation, and I started doing a little bit more training and personal development work. So the first coach I had, this guy called Mike Lim, introduced me to a LinkedIn workshop run by Walter Wee, who runs his own digital marketing agency. So that was where I learned the basics and fundamentals of being on LinkedIn and learning how to grow the persona of just being a commercial pilot to someone who can stand for something more than just flying.
Mm.
So then I realized that, hey, you know, Horizon Chaser, I can still adopt it for work outside of aviation, because now instead of chasing the horizon of our earth, I chase the horizon of people development, which is just as inspiring and infinite. So that was the seed from which I started to grow. And from there, it was, like you say, it was trial and error, writing stuff, posting stuff, learning how to engage with people online. And also then the next person that I learned from was Dr. Eric Siu. He's based in KL and he runs a very popular LinkedIn Live every Monday. Yeah, so when I first observed what he was doing on LinkedIn, it was relatively unknown. And I could see that it was a great platform to engage with people on a meaningful level. So I thought, hey, why not give it a shot? So I think I've done more than a year of live engagement on LinkedIn. So that was the next step. So this year, who knows what will come up.
Well, you certainly sounds to be very busy over the last few years.
Yeah.
But you started, from what I understand, you started your business in 2018, formally. And... you know, you are able to grow it quite, I guess, stably over the past few years. But then we hit 2020, and COVID came. And can you talk a little bit about how that impact, maybe not just you and your business, but of course your main job as commercial pilot, that's the big impact. And how did it change you during that period?
I think I have to really thank my blessings for all the things that I already had prior to the pandemic that allowed me to thrive during the pandemic.
Mm.
So even though flying was really deeply impacted, I mean, you go to the airport, you see planes everywhere. The skies would be silent. You don't hear hardly, you heard hardly if any communications from air traffic control, right? But I had the benefit of time. And like they say, the only thing more valuable than money is time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because of the fact that we started building what we wanted to build before the pandemic, we were in a good space to continue building on it. Plus, of course, you know, and you'll be happy to know this, I had saved up for a rainy day. So we had the savings to do so. And then because I wasn't flying as much, but I had a fair bit of time on the ground, I just took that as an opportunity to get to know people.
Mm.
You know, and I would say my network really, really grew during the pandemic.
Right.
And I got to know software consultants. I got to know SVPs of companies, you know, MDs of companies, people in the tech space, healthcare space, shipping, you know. So it really broadened my own horizon in terms of learning as well.
Mm.
And it taught me how to listen, taught me how to understand needs of people from different corporate sectors, right? Different kinds of companies. But at the same time, I also could see, okay, what are some of the common threats, common themes that might be affecting them or their organization?
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So you're still quite active, even more so active on Chasing Horizon during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. I was quite active. I was writing a post, I think, every day.
Ah.
Yeah, but now that aviation has recovered, thankfully, we are flying a lot more. So my content creation is less frequent than it used to be,
mm.
which also means that I have to be more strategic in how I do it
mm.
and what I write about.
Mm, I see. Okay. And what do you typically write about on Chasing Horizon?
Oh, so... I used to start out with just personal interest stories.
Mm.
Things like, okay, a shot from my scene from my life,
mm.
you know, scene from flying. I shared pictures of the view from the cockpit, you know, high up there. You can see the world in its full magnificent glory, right? And that really caught a lot of people's attention and they really enjoyed it. And then from there, I started to write about stuff that's relevant not only in aviation, but also in the general corporate sector, right?
Mm.
So things like, okay, how do you... Okay, what is good leadership, for instance?
Mm.
What is meaningful engagement? How do you listen effectively? Things like that are common in any sector you're in, right? But what are the lessons that we learn from aviation that we can then contextualize for other people? Then I also started reading things like Harvard Business Review, The Economist, on a more regular basis to just have a better sense of what certain global trends are,
mm.
To understand how large corporations think, and also to learn the kind of language that people in the corporate sector tend to use.
Mm.
Because I realized that, and this will be common to many people who are in one sector or one space, and they're trying to step into another arena altogether.
Mm.
And that is learning that language so that you can communicate effectively, so that the client or the prospect won't have to think so hard as to what you're talking about.
Mm.
And they can immediately connect and feel that, hey, this person knows what I'm talking about because we're using the same words.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you give us one example for...
So, for instance, like how some spaces like to say team members, but some like to say stakeholders,
mm.
right? Essentially, it kind of means the same thing.
Mm.
But in your engagement with the client or the prospect, then we have to see, okay, what kind of language tends to resonate better with them.
Mm.
Yeah, because language is actually the key to people's hearts. Yeah, because you use the right word, you can tap on certain emotional strings.
Along your journey, what are you seeing most common? What is the key problem, say, among individuals that you're coaching?
Yeah.
What's the typical challenges that they are facing, and how are you helping them overcome it?
I mean, leaving aside, of course, the very unfortunate and very heartbreaking cases where people actually lost their lives or suffered very significant illness. I think another thing that's also very widespread is people having to re-examine who they are.
Mm.
Right. So when you have this global phenomenon that takes away all these pleasant distractions that we all have, and we all do need distractions at some point in time, right? From travel, meeting friends, going to the clubs, going to the bars. Even sometimes, at one point, we couldn't even go out to exercise. And there was certain curtailments on that. Then the only thing we are left with is actually ourselves.
Yep.
And when we are left with ourselves, this whole journey of self-examination is always uncomfortable. And I think fundamentally, when external events call into question who we are, that is one of life's most unpleasant and at the same time, the most valuable experience that we can have.
Mm.
So it's not only on an individual level. So whenever I coach people, the first question I ask them, at some point in time, in some variation, will be, tell me, who are you?
Mm.
Right? And this is one uncomfortable conversation, uncomfortable reflection, but it is necessary. And now we are seeing it, okay, this is the individual level. Look at the organizational level.
Mm.
What does this organization stand for? So if you look at the great tech retrenchments, right?
Mm.
A lot of the organizational identities are being called into question. Their brands, things, these companies that branded themselves as, oh, we care for the people, right? We have your welfare at heart. And when so many people are laid off, you know, in a very abrupt manner, right?
Mm.
And then there's a lot of soul searching, you know, hey, exactly what do you or this organization stand for?
Mm.
So I think the organization that I belong to, that I fly with, I can hand on heart proudly say that is a place that I'm honored to belong to.
Mm.
And this is when they say the true test of a person is on and an organization is when the proverbial hits the fan. Yeah, so that is something that many people struggle with.
Yeah, that's such a powerful message, I feel. And it's something that many people and even organizations don't really think about, right? Especially, and you brought out a good point that during the COVID time, we have nothing but to re-examine ourselves.
Yeah.
I think I certainly experienced that as well during that period. But I'm curious the question of who are you and what do you stand for? If it's brought to you, Xiaoyong, how would you answer that?
So, I have my wife to thank for this. So, when we first got to know each other and I was still relatively junior as a pilot, and she told me, oh, you identify so strongly with your organization, with a profession. She asked me this question many years ago. Hey, if you weren't flying and you weren't a pilot, what would you do?
Mm.
And I had to stop and think. And my answer surprised her because I told her, I think I'll become a teacher, a teacher of some sort. And she was very surprised. But then along the way, like I said, you know, I did things like I became a mentor. You know, even now I still mentor undergraduates. I train pilots. I train people outside aviation. So during the pandemic, it was a great time to reflect on, if I could no longer fly, what would I do? And the question is, I would develop people. Yeah, I would develop people and ultimately maybe develop organizations, which we do, yeah, on a project basis.
Another thing I wanted to touch on is also we talk a lot about, you know, finding success in life.
Yeah.
Right. And right now we can see that many people is actually challenging the concept of what really is success, rather than, you know, in the 90s or 80s, when you say being successful, everybody knows that it's getting rich.
Five C's.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, now it's more nuances and it's different for everyone. For yourself, you also describe yourself as an accidental entrepreneur. So I want to understand from you, you know, in the past, how would you view success? And right now, being an entrepreneur, what's your definition of success now?
I think at some point, I was also guilty of thinking that the success was the five C's, right? The material things. But I think for now, success, whether I'm an entrepreneur or not, success means having the freedom to choose the problems that I want to solve. It's one thing. And also having the freedom to spend meaningful time with those that matter to me. I think on these two counts, it's good enough for me.
All right.
Yeah.
And talking about this as well, I assume that you are a father yourself.
Yeah. Or,
yep. And you know, looking at the just on the current environment, and also thinking about the future for our children, what are some of the things that you really want to cultivate in your kid and teach them as a lesson? Although, you know, I know as a parent myself, not necessarily they will listen to you, but in your mind, what are some of the key lessons or characteristics that you feel that you want to pass on to them in the future?
I think first thing is actually be kind. I mean, if I were to look back on my life so far and think of my moments of regret, the moments of regret will always be in situations when I could have been kind and I was not. That's one thing. The second thing is the power of learning, which is also tied to never give up. Right? This idea of, I may not know this or I don't know this, but you always add the word yet at the back. So whether it is teaching my child to ride a bicycle, to swim, or even how to make friends, everything can be learned. But we can only learn if we are willing to try and we don't give up. And the third thing which is related to that is also we have to face our fears and not run away from them. Because our fears and discomfort will always tell us who we truly are.
I'm definitely noting that down. I wanted my kids to learn as much possible wisdom from everyone, which is also a reason why I'm doing this podcast. But you touched a little bit about the never say die attitude.
Yeah. Right?
And I found that a lot in, I guess, your entrepreneur and also people who are just generally happy in life and find success and fulfillment in life. Do you feel that that is something that is already innate in you? You has always been such a person, or is something that can be cultivated? And if so, how do you cultivate that?
I think that persistence, hard work. So I shared earlier on about the bicycle, the bicycle prize. I think even when I was learning music, when I was doing track and field back in high school. So those were all experiences that taught me, if I'm willing to put in the work, commit the time to learning, I will get better at something. So when I was younger, I used to like to say, whatever doesn't kill me makes me stronger. But somehow nowadays that doesn't resonate as well with me anymore.
Right.
But now I like to think that anything worth achieving is worth struggling for.
Mm.
So why I prefer this saying is, then we have to understand who we are, which is that whole identity conversation, and what you want to stand for. And what you want to stand for will then tell you, okay, what is worth achieving for you, right? Then when we have that, it's easier to find that fuel, that motivation to keep going. And I would say that, so there was a shift, right? So previously it was like, okay, this is the game that everybody is playing. I want to win at this game. But it's not necessarily a game that I enjoy, but I'll put in the hard work and I'll do reasonably well. But then after that, I go to the point where, hey, if I win this game, but the prize is not really something that I want, then the fuel will just get taken out, you know?
Yep.
Right? But then when I started thinking about, for instance, I want to be a pilot, right? So I'm willing to suffer for it, struggle for it. Now I'm on this mission to, okay, you know, how do we help people be the best versions of themselves, right? How do we help not only people in Singapore, but the world over thrive, right? Then it gives me the fuel to, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step? And if I'm tired, it's not that I give up.
Mm.
If I'm tired, I just say, okay, I'm still going to come back, but I take a rest first. Right? That's different from giving up. Right? So it's, I would say that that's the difference between just plain old positive thinking, in that, oh, everything will work itself out, but knowing, okay, what you're willing to stand for, what you're willing to struggle for, and also how to keep going. It's not about speed. It's a marathon. So how do you keep yourself going?
What you mentioned just now also, you know, to help develop people to be the best version of themselves, it definitely requires a little bit of leadership quality in yourself. And this leadership quality, do you feel that it is something that everyone can learn and have this ability, or somehow it will be more apparent in somebody compared to the others?
I believe that everybody has the ability to lead, but it depends on the situation, right? So I'm a strengths coach, right? So each of us will have, whether it's a function of nurture or nature, each of us will have a certain innate strengths, talents, or instincts, right? Which means that in certain situations, this person might be suited. So let's say crisis. In a crisis, this person might be suited for crisis. Non-crisis, let's say everything is okay, blue sky, you want collaboration and all that. Then this another person might be more suited, right? Then if you're talking about, okay, transforming, right? Change management, okay, what kind of leader do you need then? So I would say it really depends on the context that we're looking at and what the individual's inclinations are when it comes to leadership. However, in the future, as the world, the pace and frequency of change increases, leadership would mean that a leader will need to know how to adapt his or her leadership styles. Yeah. And this can be cultivated, but it's not as straightforward as many people like to make it seem. Yeah. So, and of course, we also understand that when leading a unit, I don't say organization, any unit, whether it's in the army or a family or a school or MNC or in the aeroplane, you know, it's you will need to have different kinds of skills for each situation, right? But then you need to know how to adapt to the people. And that is another kind of skill set that takes time to develop, that more and more organizations are recognizing. I think even the Singapore government is also recognizing now, because if you observe some of the parliamentary speeches given, they're talking about the importance of coaching and mentoring skills. And in a recent parliament speech given by Patrick Tay, one of the MPs, he was saying that coaching should be made more accessible to be everyone. So he proposed that you can even use your SkillsFuture credit to go for coaching and not just the preserve of leadership, right? Yeah, so it's something that everyone can look at developing, but it really also needs to, we also really need to examine what kind of context that you want to develop this leadership in.
Before we go, right, Xiaoyong, just by listening to your life story, I feel that you have really quite an amazing life. Yeah, have a great success in both your being a commercial pilot and also from your own business. You've not only been able to have the ability and the opportunity to see the world as a pilot and see many different type of people and their struggles and going deep into their personal space from your coaching business. So you have best of both worlds. But along this journey, if you look back, right?
Yeah.
Say today you're 16 again and you saw your 16 self again. How would you go about this journey differently? Meaning that do you have any regrets along the way? And what advice would you have for your 16-year-old self?
I mean, it's a bit uncomfortable for me to hear that when you describe that, okay, you know, I live a successful life, you know, as in whatever career I'm in, because I also recognize that this success wasn't built through just my own effort. No doubt that I did put in the work. But I also recognize that I do come from some level of privilege. And I think that when we recognize that we come from privilege, our duty is to make the most of that privilege. So if I were to go back in time, I would just remind my 16-year-old self, it's not all about you. whatever privilege that you do enjoy along the way, make the most of it. Don't squander it.
I'm Stanley, and you have been listening to The Asian Mavericks, produced by Value Invest Asia. If you like this show, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you know of the perfect candidate for us to interview for our next episode, you can always reach out to us through our social media. Thank you. Until we meet again, stay safe.